Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure to continue to be with you. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate. I don't think I said that yet. Sometimes I forget. Joseph Muse is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Joe is the founder and the president of a company called Belmont Partners. And he used to work for, used to have the, what we used to think of as the security of a big business job. We now know all that is mythical, right? We know that job security is a myth. It always has been, but now it's officially, it is official. And so he said, you know what? I'm going to do my own thing. And he founded Belmont Partners, and they specialize in something called reverse mergers. And he has offices in Washington, D.C., I think it is, and New York and Shanghai, China, which is where he is right now, in China, calling us from all the way from across the other side of the planet. Joseph Muse, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. How are things in China?
Things in China are exciting. It's a very dynamic economy. It's very much focused on small businesses. There are small businesses everywhere you turn. And I think it's certainly going through a period of great growth right now. And one of the reasons why we're here is we're seeing a lot of Chinese companies actually listing in the U.S.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So the Chinese companies really are a new thing. The government controlled many aspects of business for a long time.
Right.
And it's only in the last 5 or 10 years that businesses could be privately held, privately managed and run. So a lot of the sectors here in China are missing a market leader, right? There are a number of competitors in every market out there. I liken it to the dot-com era of the 90s or the what I would imagine the automobile industry is of the was of the 10s and 20s in our country. And they're all looking for capital. They're all trying to grow. They're all trying to be the market leader. And the markets here in China, the public markets, are not well established. It's the U.S. markets that are well established, and they can get capital. So
you're saying that they're looking to U.S. markets to get established from a capital market standpoint, and they're bringing that capital back to China. And investors know that there's opportunity in China, and that's how they're finding their opportunity through these Chinese companies that are actually forming or capitalizing, I should say, in the United States.
Exactly right. The U.S. investors are putting their money in China. The company in exchange is listing their stock in the U.S. and taking the money and putting it to operations here in China. And from a U.S. investor standpoint, the ability to invest in a company growing organically at 20% or 30% is everywhere here. It's hard to find in the U.S.
It's
hard to find.
And it's developed. Very attractive to U.S. investors right now. International stocks are very attractive to U.S. investors because we've sort of a lot of people are not really very keen on U.S. stocks right now, are they?
That's right. We actually last year listed companies out of Europe, out of South Africa, Argentina, Mexico, China. I'd say probably 25% of our business is in helping overseas companies list in the U.S.
And all this was done through reverse mergers?
That's right.
All right, so let's stop for a moment and talk about reverse mergers. Folks, you heard me mention this earlier, and Joe, as I mentioned earlier in the previous segment, I was involved in a reverse merger back in the 80s, and I've been following this over the years. And I've seen a number of people do this, and I have a good friend, in fact, a member of my brain trust. Folks, if you remember Gary Broadnax with Dovari, he actually did a reverse merger back in October, and it's about time for us to get him on the show to get him to tell us about how that went. So, Joe Muse, tell us what a reverse merger is. How does it work?
The idea of a reverse merger is just simply going public on the U.S. exchange. But instead of doing a traditional IPO, you're actually merging your private business into an already existing public company that has no operations. You in turn change the name of that public company with your operation in it to reflect your company. You're now in charge of the public company. Your stock is tradable, has a ticker symbol on day one, and it's a much simpler, shorter, less expensive way to go public than with an IPO. The other major difference is that with an IPO, which takes a year or 18 months to accomplish, and a reverse merger takes 30 to 60 days to accomplish, the IPO has capital attached to it, money, when the deal closes. With a reverse merger, you're public, then you need to go find the capital.
Then you got to make the market, don't you?
What's that?
Yeah. Then you got to make the market.
That's right. That's right.
All right, let's slow down for just a minute, Joe. Folks, an IPO, initial public offering, that's what IPO means, and you know about all those that happened they were a resilient of those in the 90s. Many of them failed. You know that Sarbanes-Oxley has put the kibosh on a lot of IPO opportunities in the United States over the last three or four years. So if you decide to go IPO, if you decide to go that route, what you got to think about? I guess what I'm gonna say it this way, Joe. Folks, imagine you're going to build a house. You know you got to go pick out the lumber and the roofing and the paint and the tile, and you got to buy all those things, and you got to go to the bank, and you got to borrow money to get the interim financing for the construction, et cetera, et cetera. And then over a period of time, you build a house, and it's yours. Now, that's kind of what I think about an IPO, Joe. A reverse merger, folks, is like buying a house that's already built, and it's 90% completed, and you get to come in and pick out how you want the carpet and the paint to look. Joe, is that a fair analogy?
That's a great analogy. It's funny because we use that real estate analogy a lot when we're talking to clients. What we're providing is a financial house or financial structure for you to move into.
Or a public company in a box, if you want to. You know, like you've heard of Doc in a Box or whatever. It's public company in a box. It's only don't take that terminology lightly, because it's a real transaction. It's a real way to go public. But as you say, but it's a lot shorter. And even though it might not cost you a whole lot less, you know what it costs you up front. When you go IPO, you don't even know exactly how much it's going to cost you, do you?
That's right. That's right. You know, the other thing...
Joe, will you hold on to that thought? Folks, we're
going to
take a quick break. Joe Muse is in China right now, and he's talking to us about reverse mergers. He's an expert in this area, and I really want you to know more about this. This might be in your future, especially with Sarbanes-Oxley. We're going to talk about why reverse mergers are good, and for other reasons too, right after these messages. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our new friend Joseph Muse. Joe is founder of the and president of Belmont Partners, LLC. Joe, give us your website, please.
www.belmontpartners.net.
.net. Okay, so check that out, folks, and you'll find out more about what they do, and I'm sure you got a lot of good information in there about how a reverse merger works.
We absolutely do. When we list some of the transactions that we've done in the past, so small business owners out there can understand the process and see some other success stories.
Now you've been doing this for a handful of years now on your own. How many reverse mergers have you done?
Oh my gosh, I get that question a lot, and frankly, it's hard to count. What I do know is that last year we did 42 transactions, so almost one a week last year.
Wow.
And all different shapes and sizes. I think it's interesting to note, Jim, that you know, with an IPO, you think that your company has to have $100, $200, $300 million in revenue. It needs to have such a large size to it.
Right.
In the reverse merger process, you know, you're really looking at the need to have $2 million, $20 million, $30 million, $10 million in revenue to be able to make it work. And a lot of the clients we helped last year fall into that category. So
as low as $2 million?
That's right.
Huh, I'll be darned. Now, okay, let's talk about, folks, what you have. Joe, tell us about the entities, the two entities, and how they come together.
So you have a public company, and just think of a public company that doesn't work. Maybe you invested in it. Of course, a lot of people think of Enron. But think of a public company that just didn't work. Well, that public company is still technically out there. It still has a stock symbol.
And you're saying maybe the business is no longer functioning.
That's right.
There's nobody buying and selling for that business. It's basically not operating anymore, but it's still on the public rolls.
That's exactly right. Nobody ever notified the SEC or the NASD to remove the symbol or delete the shareholders. It just stays out there.
It still has shareholders, and the worst thing that happened to it is it got delisted.
That's right. That's okay. Right. And its business model didn't work. So you have some dot-coms in the 1999-2000 range that were small. They didn't work. They closed down their operation, and the company has no assets, no liabilities, no operation whatsoever. But again,
right.
It still has a corporate entity that's tradable today. If you wanted to go buy stock in it, you could.
Mm-hmm.
So the public company is like that financial house that you were talking about. It's sitting out there waiting for new owners to come in and take it over.
And it's almost ready for occupancy.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. What we do when we're in charge of that public company, we notify the SEC, we notify the regulatory agencies. We try to take appropriate action so that it is ready for move-in. So the new business owners don't have to worry about all that. What they need to worry about is running their company and trying to raise capital.
Right. Now, so you do the reverse merger, which is where all the stock of the private company gets conveyed to the public company. But in the process of that, the private company, which has a business model, actually takes over the board and the majority of the shares of the shell company.
That's right. So the public company acquires 100% of the private company. In exchange, it gives the private company owners stock in the public company that oftentimes is over 80 or 90% ownership of the public company. So even though it's a merger, the private company ends up being the true holder of the public company, and that's where it becomes a reverse merger.
Right.
So there are
a couple of other terms for that too, isn't there?
There are some other terms that people talk about in today's market. A lot of people call it APOs, which I think is a neat term. It's an alternative public offering.
Right. Right. Now, but you gotta get some. Now, when you go IPO. When you go the traditional route, folks, let's just call it the traditional route, initial public offering, when you go that route, there's been a lot of buzz. You've had a dog and pony show. You've had a national tour where you've gone around and built up a lot of interest and a lot of that sort of thing. So when you go public, there's a little bit of anticipation, maybe a lot of anticipation. People want to get in. They want to be the first investors. And so, you know, bada bing, bada bam, the day you go public, you got, maybe you go public at 8, 9, 10, 12, 13 bucks a share. Right?
Right, right. And it doesn't quite happen that way with the reverse merger. That's where
right.
It's a little bit different.
Right, because it's a slower process. So you kind of make the market, as they say, you go public with an IPO, but with a reverse merger, you make the market after the merger, right?
That's correct. You know, what we're seeing over the last 12 to 24 months, Jim, is that there are some investors who are hedge fund or institutional fund investors who are investing in the company at the same time it goes public, and they help carry the burden of making the market, so to speak. But for those companies that just go public into the already existing public company or public shell,
right.
Then the burden's on them to market their company, market their company stock,
right.
To investors.
Well, look, Joe, have you got time to stay with us one more segment?
Sure.
I've got some more questions. We need to finish up a couple of things here. So I'm going to ask you to hang around one more segment. And folks, we're going to talk about this capital issue. Once you become a reverse merger, how long does it take? Is it a good, you know, this is where the rubber meets the road, folks. This is why you go public. So if it's not a good deal for you, maybe the IPO is the better way. We're going to find out that on the other side of these messages. Stay with us.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Please use those to your advantage. We had record months in both of those websites in last month. smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Joe Muse is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's the founder and the president of Belmont Partners. He's a specialist in reverse mergers, helping small companies who want to go public with faster, maybe with a little less pain. But nothing's perfect, is it, Joe? And we're right to the point of where we're trying to. Now we're getting to the rubber meets the road part, where we've got the bathtub built. We know what we want to look like, and all that sort of thing. And now it's time to turn on the faucet and fill this bathtub up with some capital. And so. With the IPO, hopefully there's been a good bit of anticipation, and you got people ready to buy. You've talked to your friends, you've told your customers about it, and everybody's standing by with a little bit of money to put in to the IPO, because now you're going to be listed probably at least on the NASDAQ. At least, you know, you're going to launch at IPO. You're going to launch for, you know, at least a few dollars, if not in the teens, but with a reverse merger, you're actually going to be kind of in the penny stock stage, aren't you, most of the time?
Well, you're going to be on the over-the-counter market, and generally speaking, you're going to be trading anywhere from 50 cents to $10, just based on past experience. It depends on the size of your company, and if you're able to raise capital as a part of the entire transaction. You know, companies come to us not because they say, "Hey, I want to go public." Companies come to us because they say, "I want to raise capital."
That's right.
How do I get capital? And somebody has talked to them in the past about this being a very efficient method to do that.
So, but what are the chances that you go public through a reverse merger, and the shares only start trading at 30, 40, 50 cents a share, and they just sort of languish there for a while? I mean, how do you prevent that from happening? You need two things, don't you? You need the price of the shares to go up, and you need volume.
Right. Well, you probably need a third ingredient to that, which is, I think, the drivers behind it, is you need to have a good set of consultants and advisors around you. When the companies come to us, they, typically speaking, have already engaged an investment banking firm or a financial consultant who's got experience in these matters, who can help guide them through the issues. They have a really good attorney and a really good accounting firm to make sure that they're doing everything appropriately, taking the appropriate steps. So generally speaking, by the time the clients come to us, there's already a plan in place. And the small business owner, as I said before, wasn't looking to go public. They were looking to raise capital.
Right.
And the investment banking firm has already talked about being able to raise capital for them.
Right. So now, but what are the chances that they need to raise? Let's say they need to raise $5 million in capital. Is that a reasonable number to think about going with a reverse merger for? How much? What minimum capital number do you think they need for a reverse merger to justify it?
So, you know, I think it really it varies by the company. We've seen as little as $1 million being raised, and the company being very happy about that. And then we've seen a number of transactions, Jim, especially out of China, which again is where I'm calling here from, Shanghai, where they're raising $20, $30, $40 million at the time of closing.
But if it's only $1 million or even $2 or $3 million, is that worth the hassle of being public? Because there is hassle in being public, isn't there?
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, certainly you have shareholders now involved in your company who own a relatively small position in your company, but they're still shareholders. They're still going to want to call you up. They're still going to review how you're running the company. I think for some companies, raising $1 million. Makes sense. What we tell clients is only raise as much money as you need so that you can grow the business, and the next time you go out to raise money, your business is going to be worth more. It's going to have a higher valuation, and you're going to give up less.
And it also depends on your business model. If you got a compelling business model that the market makers can tell a story about, then you're gonna get some volume, aren't you, and some traction.
Absolutely. And, you know, the idea is for a lot of the investors out there. Listen, I can get on the bandwagon of this small company that has the ability to double or triple in size in the next year or two, which I can't do in buying a NASDAQ stock or a New York Stock Exchange stock.
But at some point in time, if your stock does well, you actually can then get on one of the major exchanges like the NASDAQ, right?
That's right, and we've had some of our clients do that.
And that can be a good thing. Hey, Joe, this has been great information. Will you come back another day and talk to us some more about this?
Absolutely, Jim. Please, anytime.
And it's BelmontPartners.net, right?
That's correct.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Muse, be safe coming back from China. Joe, see you next time.
Thank you.
Quick break, right back after these messages with Nicole Gelinas. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.